1350 KMAN.
9:06 here at News Radio KMAN. Andrew Shores on In Focus this morning, and I'm joined by USD 383 Assistant Superintendent Eric Reed and Board Member Daryl Eady. And welcome on into the show this morning. And by the way, for anyone listening out there, phone lines are open 785-537-1350. And gentlemen, the new year's begun. Fortunately, avoided last week's ice storm, able to keep classes in session. Probably a positive on your end, right?
That was absolutely a positive on our end. Keeping the temperature up right over the freezing line really saved us in a lot of ways in this community. So we're grateful, and we're grateful for the three-day weekend fell at a good time for us.
I'm always glad when we have no damage to our schools or any other facilities that we have, you know, so missing the ice storm is really great.
Seems like maybe a few degrees cooler and it probably could have been just a little bit more disastrous for the area.
It's very possible, yeah. A couple degrees lower, we would have been fighting a lot more. Yeah, all, with power staying on, food stays cold, everything good happens when power stays on.
Well, and I guess that didn't even strike me. Holiday weekend, that was not strategically placed, but very convenient, right?
It was helpful.
Very helpful.
Grateful. Yeah.
But it seemed to be moving closer and closer to Tuesday. I was a little worried for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure none of the students probably would have been complaining as long as there was a still internet on at home. But looking ahead, school board meeting coming up this evening, of course, in the second meeting of the month. And, you know, not a lot of stuff under new business. It's a little bit deceptive looking at the agenda, but still plenty of things going on this evening, especially in the special recognition. Seems like some really positive notes for the district.
Well, it's always great when we get to recognize different groups within the district. This time, our Manhattan High School Thespian Troupe had a Gold Honor Award, and that's a great thing. And we're really pleased to be able to honor them tonight with that. And, of course, you know, unfortunately, we can only recognize a few teachers each year. But tonight, we get to recognize the master teacher list. I could go ahead and say,
sure.
The nominees this year are Andrea Wallenberg from Northview, Wendy Randall from Frank Bergman, Angie Motley from Amanda Arnold, Ashley Pryor from Bluemont, Kalista Speak from Ogden, Crystal Titus from Woodrow Wilson, Emily Yeager from Eisenhower, Christopher Payne from Theodore Roosevelt, and Erica McMillan from Marlette. All great teachers, but we have a tremendous amount of great teachers in our district. It's just these are the ones that stand out this year.
How are teachers nominated for this award?
And you got to put the master teacher at the top, the one that, was selected as our master teacher.
And that's Cheryl
Fagel.
So how are teachers nominated for this award? I mean, you just named off a long list of teachers who are obviously deserving, but what's the criteria?
This one has worked through KNEA, our local teachers union, and they get nominated through a selection process. For an application they put together, and this is involved in the state master teacher program out of Emporia. So there's a banquet down in Emporia later on where they recognize all the area teachers.
So ultimately, is the master teacher from USD 383 put into the competition with other teachers from around districts around the state?
Yes, put in the pool. They win the prize of getting to fill out a big portfolio application.
Oh, so, paperwork.
But, yeah, a lot of paperwork, but it's pretty cool. I think everybody's been through it, learned a lot through the process. It's reflective. It's not easy, but I think they enjoy basically putting together what makes them successful and what they do and in a way that helps other teachers. That's what I love about Master Teacher, what they put together.
Well, and it's probably a little bit difficult. It seems like everyone's probably pretty good at picking out their own flaws, but when it comes to focusing on your own strengths and having to write those down, that's probably a little bit tough.
Yeah, those applications really focus on their strengths, what they do, and they, like I said, they kind of have to brag on themselves, and it's not a position they're in very often.
Well, I love the one statement that Fagel said in her application was, one of my best qualities as a teacher is my patience, and I can't imagine any teacher out there not having to have a lot of patience, something I don't have a lot of, but I'm glad they do.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting way of looking at things, and fortunate to have so many quality teachers.
Absolutely.
Takes a special person, obviously, to volunteer to work with children, have the patience to work with children, and just shows when you name off that many different names and have to select a winner, I can't imagine that being an easy process.
No.
I don't envy those at the Emporia, where they actually do the state final election process of it, going through all the districts and all the teachers throughout the state that are nominated and all those booklets. That's a massive task.
Maybe after touching on just a little bit of positive news, there's going to be quite a bit of discussion at the meeting tonight surrounding school funding, surrounding the budget net for next year. And obviously plenty of action going on in Topeka right now as everyone awaits the decision from the state Supreme Court and waiting for some action as far as a formula. We're going to hear from Lou Faust, Business and Finance Director. What do you expect board members to hear at the meeting this evening regarding legislation?
Well, kind of what we're going to put forward is what we know right now. Typically, we do a legislative update at every meeting. Weren't planning on doing that, but the governor came out with some of his financial plans so far, and we just wanted to get those out to the public so they get a chance to comment. Some things have been received better than others by the legislature so far, but we got a fairly new legislative body as a collective group and definitely different leadership, especially in the House. So what's going to fly and what's not going to fly, I think we got a lot of room to work and to talk to our legislatures to get our views out there on things and how it impacts 383 specifically. So I think it's an opportunity. So the more we know about what's being proposed, the more we can comment on it.
Well, and it seems like a lot of the proposals that came from Brownback's speech last time was actually postponing payments, reducing amounts to CAPERS, nothing that's really helpful or increasing anything. Some of it actually has been reductions in some of our special need funds area. In fact, one of the other things we're talking about tonight, the CETE program, there's been some reduction of funding there, which is another one of those partially unfunded mandates that we always talk about. You know, because it was in 2006, Perkins, I think, was the name of the act.
Yeah. They've got to find some revenue in there and through that some cuts because of the budget deficit. It's a difficult problem to fix. It's not something that comes about easy. And I would say the tax committee, which one of our reps, Tom Phillips, is the vice chair of it, and Stephen Johnson, the chair, they started in on it right away. They didn't let anything settle under their feet before they got to work on it. And which is good because they've got a great task. What we haven't seen a lot of is formula. As far as the new school formula, they've kind of been sitting on that, or they've been talking, listening, contemplating, but we're not sure where that new formula is going to come out of. Or you hear things, you think things, but nothing official yet. So I'm not sure where we are with that.
Well, and obviously it seems like the block grant funding has been largely unpopular.
Yes, and I would comment on that, where everything that I've seen so far going forward to next year, that we plan this next year, we plan that next year, kind of points me toward having another year of block grants. Even though the governor's come out and said he would like a formula in place next year, all the talk seems to point to block grants again.
That's kind of the way we're planning it, is block grants, which is still a reduction in funding for the schools.
Which I've seen from sitting at USD 383 Board of Education meetings, seems to be a lot of talk about how great the old formula was. And my question is, why did it ever get changed, and why would it be impossible to go back to that?
I don't know if it was perfect. It was good. I mean, it was a constitutional plan. It addressed some specific needs, but it was complicated for typical people to understand, and even people within the legislature, because it was complicated where the money came from and where it went to. And I think unless you're in school full time and you work on that, it's very difficult to understand that. Not too difficult to explain, I don't think. But especially the weighting categories that, you know, if a student lived over 2.5 miles away, we got transportation funding. If they fell into an at-risk category, we received at-risk funding for them. So, and special education, that's a federal program, and that's its own complicator.
Well, and something I heard from USD 383 when you were speaking with area legislators was the lack of special funding for military students, military families. Was that something that used to exist that doesn't exist anymore, or is that something you would just like to see instated?
Well, in the last formula, we were able to get a second military count. Our military is fairly transient, so we can gain a lot of students during the year. We could also lose a lot of students during the year. So there was actually a February count day for military students that came in after our count day that attended the school. And, it would raise our class sizes up where we'd be in position to hire new teachers because of the extra students. Sometimes it was more than others, but that second military count really helped us out, especially with our military population. So we just like to see that addressed in some capacity rather than a single count day.
If you remember, just a few months ago, they talked about the reduction at Fort Riley of 3,500 troops being deployed. Well, now they're talking about the 5,000 troops that are coming back by March. So, that's the type of fluctuations they're talking about with the military. That, really reduces our number of kids at the school, then all of a sudden you've got a real large impact of increased students at the school.
Because having 5,000 troops come home means having their families come home and having more kids in your schools. And so I would assume the problem there is, how do you pay for these additional students coming into your buildings?
That's kind of the challenge. And having deployed soldiers come back, some of them stay during their deployment. Some of the families will go with closer to family, closer to grandma, grandpa. You get a lot of that, but when they come back home, they're family and they need to be together. So we're faced with that challenge and we want to serve them. That's the bottom line. Is we're a military community. We've got to factor in that population. It's a special group, and when a student does have their parent out on deployment, they're facing a different set of issues. When mom or dad is walking a street in Afghanistan or Iraq. There's some pressure there, and there's some worry. Are they going to come back? Is something going to happen to them? And that's a stressor on a 8-year-old little guy.
At that point, it's about more than just the classroom education. It's about helping the child's
absolutely,
needs.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That's why we had to increase our social workers in our schools. A couple of years ago, we added an extra one because there has been a lot of back and forth deployment, and it's really hard on the family. Anybody who's been around Fort Riley knows that how tough that is on the kids and on the family itself. I mean, Fort Riley has tried to increase some of their support there, but that still goes on to the student in the school. Yeah, they need a little extra help.
They've tried a lot to help, and they've been very helpful, and it's going to take a collective effort.
Now, USD 475 Junction City, am I correct in saying they get federal did I hear that correctly at a board meeting where they receive federal funding for their military families? Do they see an additional revenue stream that USD 383 does not?
Well, since they get over 56% of the students in their district, they get what's called high impact aid funding, which is over and above, which if you follow their high school stuff right now is what they're looking at for their high school expansion funding. They do get some extra funding over there for that specific, but all of those schools on post itself belong to 475. They're in charge of administrating those schools.
So yeah. That's where the difference lies.
Well,
then.
We get some impact aid, but the impact aid's based on, like Daryl said, your student population that's connected to the military. Theirs is much higher than ours.
Well, it's 9:20 here on KMAN's In Focus. We're going to go ahead and head to our first break. But of course, this morning with us, we have USD 383 Assistant Superintendent Eric Reed and Board Member Daryl Eady. We'll be right back here on News Radio KMAN.